Using Meditation to Unlock My Inner Wisdom. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a seminar in London. 6 days with 18 lectures, 18 question periods, and 6 3-hour meditations. But actually, it's going to be 21 lectures. And you all have a copy of the lectures. And we will read the paragraph I have written here, which is the sustenance of each lecture at the time we do our lecture. And you all have a copy of this. So we will begin here on our program of the day. Each day we'll have 3 a.m. 3-hour meditation, 8 a.m. breakfast, 10 a.m. first hour lecture, 11 frequently asked questions, 12 noon lunch, 2 p.m. second daily lecture, 3 p.m. frequently asked questions, 4 p.m. third daily lecture, 5 p.m. frequently asked questions, 6 p.m. one-to-one counseling, 7 p.m. dinner, and 8 p.m. sleep. Okay? No. Okay. We are entering into the topic of our seminar, which is using meditation to unlock my inner wisdom. And I'd like to read you an article here that is taken from the Discovery magazine for this September 2011. It's not even here yet. September 2011 from the Discovery magazine. And the magazine article is written by David Eagleman, and the article is The Secret Life of the Mind. The subconscious knows many things that your conscious self does not know, or at least does not let you know that it knows. Only a tiny fraction of the brain is dedicated to conscious behavior. The rest works feverishly behind the scenes, regulating everything from breathing to mate selection. In fact, neuroscientist David Eagleman of Baylor College of Medicine argues that the unconscious workings of the brain are so crucial to everyday functioning that their influence often trumps conscious thought, often takes over conscious thought. To prove it, he explores little-known historical episodes, the latest physiological research, and the enduring medical mysteries revealing the bizarre and often inexplicable mechanism underlying daily life. And Eagleman's theory is epitomized. By the deathbed confession of the 19th century mathematician James Clerk Maxwell, who himself developed the fundamental equations unifying electricity and mathematics. Quite a guy. Maxwell declared that something within him had made the discoveries. He actually had no idea how he achieved his great insights. It is easy to take credit after an idea strikes you, but in fact, neurons in your brain secretly perform an enormous amount of work before the inspiration hits you. The brain, Eagleman argues, runs its show incognito, or as Pink Floyd put it, there's somebody in my head, but it's not me. So, he goes on, there is a looming chasm between the what your brain knows and what your mind is capable of accessing. Consider the simple act of changing lanes while driving a car. Try this. Close your eyes, grip an imaginary steering wheel, and go through the motions of lane change. Imagine that you're driving in the left lane and you would like to move to the right lane. Before reading on, actually try it. I'll give you 100 points if you do it correctly. Okay. Like almost everyone else, It's really a fairly easy task, isn't it? Right. I'm guessing that you held the steering wheel straight, then banked it over to the right for a moment, and then straightened it out again. No problem. Like almost everyone else, you got it completely wrong. And the motion of turning the wheel rightward for a bit, then straightening it out again, would steer you off the road. Just as you just piloted a course for the left lane onto the sidewalk. The correct motion for changing lanes is banking the wheel to the right, then back through the center, and continuing the wheel just as far to the left side, and only then straightening it out. Don't believe it? Verify it for yourself the next time you're driving your car. It's such a simple motor task that you'll have no problem accomplishing it in your daily driving. But when you're forced to assess the conscious action, you're flamboozled. The lane-changing example is one of a thousand. You are not consciously aware of the vast majority of your brain's ongoing activities, nor would you be. It would interfere with the brain's well-oiled processes. The best way to mess up your piano piece is to concentrate on your fingers. The best way to get out of breath is to think about your breath and your breathing. The best way to miss a golf ball is to analyze your swing. And we find in this immortalized poem, such as the puzzled centipede, "A centipede was happy quite, until a frog in fun said, 'Pray tell which leg comes before after which.' This raised her mind to such a pitch, she lay distracted in the ditch, not knowing how to run." And so the centipede couldn't walk because she analyzed how to walk. You, every time you think, you're walking down the street and all of a sudden you think, am I walking beautifully? Am I walking correctly? You'll start walking terrible. You start missing your beat. You start doing everything out of focus. You did. It's just the way we're built. We don't think of it. We do it naturally. And that's beautiful. The Liar in Your Head, in 1974. That's recent, isn't it? On December 31st, 1974, Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, very famous Supreme Court judge, was debilitated by a stroke that paralyzed his left side and confined him to a wheelchair. But Justice Douglas demanded to be checked out of the hospital on the grounds that he was fine. He declared that reports of his paralysis were a myth. When reporters expressed skepticism, he invited them to join him for a hike, a move interpreted as absurd. He even claimed to be kicking football field goals with his paralyzed leg. As a result of this apparently delusioned behavior, Douglas was dismissed from his seat on the Supreme Court. What Douglas experienced is called anosognosia. The term describes a total lack of awareness about an impairment. It's not that Justice Douglas was lying. His brain actually believed that he could move just fine. But shouldn't the contradictory evidence show that an alert these were they were the problem? It turns out that alerting the system to contradictions relies on particular brain regions, especially ones called the anterior cingulata cortex. Because these conflict monitorizing regions incompatible ideas will result in one side or the other winning. The brain either contradicts the story that makes these compatible or ignores one side of the debate. In a special circumstance, the brain damage, the system can be damaged, and then the conflict can cause no trouble to the conscious mind. But it's just the way it works. During the war in England, they had plane spotters because flight was new to everyone, and the Germans were coming over trying to bomb England. And so they had men posted to spot the planes and tell whether they were Germans bringing bombs or whether they were the Englishmen returning home. And you don't want to shoot up your own men. And they found two or three people, two or three, were very good at spotting this. They knew intuitively, but looking too, they knew which was English and which was German. And then they tried to train people in this. And in training these people, they trained these people to do like they did. But they would say, no, you're wrong. Or, you're right, you're wrong, you're right. And pretty soon, after a couple of weeks of doing this, the trainees became alert to picking which ones were Germans and which ones were English, you know. And then they had a program, chicken sexers. When you have baby chicks, you have to put the females in one box and the males in another. And the females must be fed good food so that they will be egg-producing. The males are just going to be nothing. They'll be disposed of or raised for some from meat, or you might say. But how do you tell a male or a female? Cats are bad enough, but chickens are terrible. So the English people figured out how to do it. They checked the chicken, and they guessed, and they were right much of the time. Well, the Japanese came along, and they invented a sexing method known as vent sexing, by which experts could readily ascertain the sex of one-day-old hatchlings. Beginning in the 1930s, poultry breeders from around the world traveled to Japan to the sexing venting school, and they were trained how to do it. But there, they had to look at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of little chicks. And, so they began to get a sensitivity to it. And the ones who were very excellent at it were very sensitive to it. They hardly needed to look at all. They knew, and they were correct. But this is what they taught. They taught sensitivity. And so we have within us sensitivities that we never have begun to lay hold to, never have begun to pay much attention to or get much benefit from. And we can, but we haven't done it. So now let's just take our first lecture topic here for lecture, as we call it here, 19. In innocence, I open my heart to all that I am and live in the awareness of what I am. I feel a sense of peace and gratitude in my heart, and the divine in me leaps forth enthusiastically and intelligently. Pretty exciting, isn't it? We can do that. We can do that so beautifully and so wonderfully, and we can do it just so marvelously if we would just let go and let it happen. And sometimes we do it, and sometimes we don't. But if we just let go and let it happen, beautiful things happen to us. Now, we will place this here so that you can see it easily. Okay. In innocence, I open my heart to all that I am and live in the awareness of what I am. I feel a sense of peace and gratitude in my heart, and the divine in me leaps forth intelligently. That's this first one right there. So, How do we establish that in our minds, in our hearts, in our being, so that we can benefit from it? How do we put that to work so that we can use it? Now, you all have heard the article from Discovery Magazine here, and we've read a few paragraphs from it, and it's entitled Secret Life of the Mind. The subconscious knows many things that your conscious self does not. We want to learn how we can touch in to our subconscious mind and let our subconscious mind reveal to us all of the wonderful possibilities that we have before us. And how do we go about it? Do you know the answer? We spoke about it before. The answer is, I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. Remember that one? I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. When we have any difficulty at all, we say that. Now, what are we doing? I don't know. Why are we doing it? I don't know what's happening. I don't know. You don't need to. You don't need to. The chicken sex spotters had no idea what they were doing. They just knew what they were doing, and they did it, and they believed in it. The airplane spotter. How can you see? You look up here and see two planes. You put on your binoculars, and you can't tell much difference between the German plane and the English plane, because they both had the same type of planes. You know, how could you tell which was the guy? English guy's coming back, so you don't shoot them down. But how do you know them? After a few weeks, the trainees began to know definitely which was which, and they were right. Now, after a few weeks of testing, they looked up there. That's an English plane. No, you're wrong. That's German. That's a German plane. You know you're wrong. That's English. You know, that's an English plane. And yes, you're right. That's English. That's German. Yes, you're right. That's German. You know, pretty soon, they didn't say, I know that I know that I know that God in me knows the answer. They just said, yes, no, you know, yes. they challenged their invisible subconscious mind to come up with the answers that were necessary to come up with. And in challenging their invisible subconscious mind, they came up with the answers. They came up with the realization of what was the truth. Now, they didn't know how. You can't tell. His article here, written by this scientist, he said, they didn't know how. They didn't know how. And this one scientist who said, he developed the magnetic the formula for, what kind of formulas did he develop there? He developed the formula for two things there. Something within him. Yes, here it is. The fundamental equations unifying electricity and magnetism. I didn't even know there was a fundamental equation unifying them. But he developed it. And how did he develop it? He said, I don't know. Something within him. He said here, where did he say it out? Oh, yeah. Had made this. He actually had no idea how he achieved his great insights. No idea how he achieved his great insights. It is easy to take credit after an idea strikes you, but in fact, neurons in your brain secretly perform an enormous amount of work before inspiration hits. See? Someone in my head, but not me. Now, I'm not asking you to believe that. I'm not asking you to think that that's a possible way to go. I'm only telling you, do it. You sit down at the piano, and you practice the piano. Now, pretty soon you stop thinking of where you're putting your fingers. This finger here, and then you start putting them where you know they should be. And then pretty soon you go beyond that. Now, we on YouTube recently, on television, you can pick them up, have been watching several YouTube articles about children. 2 years old. The mother set the kid at the piano, and he started to play it without any practice, any training, any knowledge. He just played it because it was in it. Then he heard great concert pieces for the piano on the radio or record or something, and he heard it once and played it once perfectly. But that's interesting. He played it once perfectly. The next time he played it with heart and soul. He interpreted it with his understanding of what the music wanted to, what the composer was trying to say with the music. Wow! I mean, we don't even do that. We're mechanical, basically, as we learn how to play the piano. But there was not only 1 3-year-old, 1 5-year-old, 1 8-year-old, a whole host of them from all over the world. You have a program here in Europe, in London. It's these remarkable people. And they have people come from all walks of life doing whatever they're going to do. And many times, men and women who get up there looking, you know, just ordinary, sing so beautifully, though so fantastic. I mean, you know, their debut, really. But they're being heard. And they would never have been heard if the radio, the television program hadn't given them the opportunity. But it's a very popular show here, too. But that's what these children are doing. And they're doing it on YouTube. And if you want to get it, you can get it easily from pulling it in on your computer on YouTube if you use it. But how do they do that? How do they do it? The one woman, she said her kid at the piano, you know, on her lap, and she was playing a piece, and he did the same thing. And then they showed another little kid about, 8 years old. His little fingers, you know, little shorties, you know, little tiny. And he was running up and down those keys like a magical magician. If you didn't see it, you'd think it was a master. If you see it, you know it's a master. A super consciousness. But now, who's playing? Is that boy playing, or is it his subconscious mind playing? Is it something inside him that's doing the playing? And you see, this is where we want to move our awareness into the realization that there is a subconscious. Now, we'll get to calling it another name soon, but there is a subconscious mind within us, and that subconscious mind wants to be heard. It wants to be known. It wants to be used. So we go into our point here, and we say, in innocence, I open my heart to all that I am, and live in the awareness of what I am. I feel a sense of peace and gratitude in my heart, and the divine in me leaps forth enthusiastically and intelligently. And it is so fantastic, it is so magnificent how this works. But we are the ones who apply it. Now, we were driving from the airport to Magpie Close, which means a street, which means a community, which means a group of housing. And it used to be a hospital here, and now it's a group of apartments. Well, we drove up to Magpie Close from the airport, Heathrow, and on the way, we were talking about how we do things and how we are expressing ourselves and how we live. And we were saying that there's no way that we could ever really be as wonderful as we are. Something in us is that magic. Now, we weren't saying all these things I'm going to say right now, but these are the things we were pointing to. Can you tell yourself how to wink? The minute you start telling yourself how to wink, you mess up. But you wink because the circumstance calls for it. And it's natural. See, it's natural. Now, if I tell you smile, You know, you say, yeah, I feel like a silly fool smiling like this. But when you smile naturally, you're not a silly fool. You have beautiful attitudes about you. Now, how does your body know how to smile naturally, better than when you smile purposefully? You know, if you smile on purpose using your intelligence, you'd think that it would be a better smile than your natural smile, you know. But a person's natural qualities, which means they're qualities that come from that hidden something inside of them, that subconscious action within them. And we heard the story of the centipede. Once it questioned how it's going to walk with all its legs, it got all crumbled up. It couldn't walk again. It couldn't walk again. Now, in Samantha, our beautiful little witch, you know, she and her husband were with a fellow and his wife who were playing golf. And they were out on the golf course, and Samantha's husband, his boss didn't want him to win at the golf. He wanted to let the other guy win because he wanted to have the contract for advertising from him. And so every time Samantha's husband, Darren, would get up to hit the ball, he'd go, or then the other guy, he turned out to be a real corker too. He says, when you're hitting the ball and you're breathing in, do you breathe in when you hit the ball or do you breathe out when you hit the ball? It threw it. But Samantha, being a magical lady, she just twinkled her nose at her husband and he hit the ball right where he wanted it to go. Nothing disturbed him. And even when they put the ball in a can, because his boss said, you're winning and I don't want you to win. I want this $1 million account. And so he saw a beer can there and it was open. So he rolled the ball in the beer can and just then the other guy drove up and there was nothing could be done about it, you know. And he says, well, let's see you knock it out with this beer can on it. Well, Samantha again twinkled her nose and he hit it and went out. Now, Tiger Woods, he doesn't have a Samantha around him, but he's got a magic talent within him. He believes he can do it. Now, he messed up fooling around with women and stuff like that, and that had nothing to do with his golf game. His golf game is still good, he's still fantastic, but his morals put him out of public favor. But he's still good. Because he does what? He uses his intuitive knowingness and he uses principle. The principle is, I can put that ball where I want it. And you don't tell the club how to hit the ball. You don't aim the club. You don't hold it in a certain way. You don't stand a certain way, as we've been taught to believe. But you see the ball where you want it to go, and then you hit it there. And this is the art. This is the magical quality within us that we all have. The quality of using the intuitive wisdom, the intuitive genius, the intuitive self, the subconscious self that we talk about. And that's what we'd like to learn to live. Now, as we were driving along, the comment was made, sure, if you follow the rules, you can do that. Sure, if you follow the program, you can. You know, these students who work with the gurus, the chelas, they work with their gurus for years on end. They can do all these things. Why can they do these things? Because they do what they're told to do. They go to their master not knowing what he's teaching them, not knowing why he's teaching them. They go to their masters, and he's not saying, now, you kneel here and you kneel there and you pray this way and you hold your... No, he doesn't say. He teaches them your thought. The great gurus do not teach a religion. They teach a philosophy. They teach a philosophy of thought. And they teach this day after day, after week, after month, after year. And then when the fellows arrive at the awareness of being rather masterful with their thought, then they're very happy doing just what they're doing. They're living it. They don't need to be a teacher. They don't need to go out and show other people around how to do it. They don't have to go out and prove anything to the world. They just do it and enjoy it. And this is what I want everyone who takes the courses of the University of Healing and takes our programs at any time. I want you to leave our seminars, leave our courses, leave our programs a master. And you are a master for yourself. You're number one. And you have figured out, you have figured out how to use your subconscious mind. You figured out how to tie into it. And you figured out that tying into your subconscious mind, you tie in by doing what? You tie in by repetition. I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. Or you look at the ball. No. Look at the plane spotter. No, that's German. No, that's English. No, that's German. That's English. Yeah, that's German. Yeah, that's English. Yeah, that's English. That's German. Again and again and again for weeks. The ones who wanted to learn wanted to save the Englishman from being shot down accidentally, you know, on purpose. And so they had a dedication to learn. You understand? And so they learned in a short time, where it would take many others to take a long time. But the lives of those men that were being shot down was precious to them. They were their countrymen. They were out there to make sure that the British weren't shooting down their own countrymen, you know. But the British couldn't, they had to be concerned about the German bombers. And when the German, if they would paint their planes like English planes and come over, you know, then what could you know? Because they didn't have radar, they didn't have anything else to tell. All they had was binoculars, you know. So, they were trained. Now, here you got these fellows who have, and girls who have to learn all about chickens and sexing chickens to tell which is a male, which is a female. And, wow, in Japan they made a very great science of it. And they were very successful. Now, these people were just you and me, in off the street, going there to get a job, being a chicken sexer, and they later call it venting, because there's a vent area where the egg comes out, and so chicken venting, and within a few months, people who went there trained wanted the job, really wanted it. Were excellent. Very nominal mistakes. But they were excellent. You know what happened when they made a mistake? They were thinking of something else. Their mind, because you can't keep your mind on one thing forever. Yeah, and, you're chicken sexing, and you know the bell's going to ring, it's going to be spinning time, and you got a date with your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever, and you know, blah, 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 that comes in your mind, and you blow it. So, distraction. I would like to have you learn to be totally undistracted, totally one-pointed. You know our list of words there. You want to say them?
One-pointed. Unconditional love.
What one?
Untouched. Untouched, non-possessive.
Non-possession.
Non-judgmental.
Non-judgmental.
Unconditional love.
Unconditional love.
Self-dedication.
Yeah.
That's five of them.
Any others?
Self-dedication.
Please.
I said five of them.
It's to be six.
Self-dedication.
Hmm?
Self-dedication.
No, that's another series.
I'm one-pointed. I am untouched. I am non-possessed. I am non-judgmental. I am unconditional.
That's
love.
The sixth.
That's the fifth.
That's the fifth.
Yes.
The sixth. Okay, we've got these written down, and we will use them and get them out this way. But why? Why must it be one-pointed? If you're distracted, you don't get anywhere.
Yes.
Why must you be unconditional?
I like me.
If you don't love yourself and like yourself, you're not going to do anything on your behalf. Your inner self is going to do everything it can to prove that you're wrong when you want to know that you're wrong.
Yes.
I can never learn that. I don't understand that. Mathematics is too much for me. You know, some people say that.
Mm.
And that's silly. Really silly. Now, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to take these programs, any program. I say, if you're going to be a Catholic, be a good one. If you're going to be a Mormon, be a good one. If you're going to be anything you are, be a good one. How do you be a good one? Believe what you're doing and follow it. And have no doubts about it. We watched a very fascinating Mormon show. It's from the Mormons. And it was heaven something or other. And it's about a young Mormon boy, 18 years old, who went out to do his 3 years in the field. Every Mormon boy for 3 years must leave from 18 to 21 and go out wherever he's sent, wherever in the world he's sent, and do missionary work. So this kid was sent to Togo, you know, Togo, in the islands there. Yeah. And when he got there, I mean, they weren't ready for him. They were supposed to be ready. Everything was supposed to be all set. They didn't even know he was coming. And the guy on the boat threw him off the boat because he had only paid to go that far. And the police didn't want him because they hadn't had a signed in that he was coming, you know. And I don't think they were that strict, but anyhow, that's good for a story. Well, it showed this 18-year-old kid with a pure 100% dedication. And he worked with those people. With that dedication of a youth, of a vital, dynamic person. And he baptized hundreds of people. He built many churches. He built several churches with their full minister and everything else there, you know. And then one guy came and he said, "You can't do that. You haven't got authority to do that." "Well, what am I supposed to do? I didn't know." "Well, you don't have any papers signing that they're baptized and stuff." "I didn't know I was supposed to fill out these papers and get it to you." And so that night he ran in, filled out all the papers for several thousand people that he had baptized and the marriages he performed and all the things he did, and handed it to the guy. And the guy, it was an elderly guy, and he said, "I really probably shouldn't have said that. It was true what I said. But I should have realized a man of his dedication and what he has done, he wasn't fooling around." And he wasn't. And it showed how he went through many things and how Jesus Christ healed different people and stuff. And it was quite amazing, quite beautiful. But it showed integrity, values, and all these things. One young girl that he saved, and hi, come in, sit down. One young girl that he had saved. And he tried to work with these people as a dedicated man. And he was just 18, and he left there when he was a little over 21. And he saved this young lady because she was... She was the daughter of the one woman's husband. He cheated on her and went out and had a baby with somebody else and then brought the baby home for her to take care of. And it was not her baby, and the baby felt in that small community of Togo that she was not worthy and not good and so forth. Well, the young Mormon minister, he taught her, all God's children are beautiful, all are wonderful, regardless of what your background is, regardless of what status it is, you're wonderful, and you are wonderful. And then they tried to take her away, and make a whore out of her, but it didn't work out. They couldn't take her. And so then the woman, the girl's mother said to him, "You must marry my daughter because she loves you and you love her because you have saved her so many times. And if you don't marry her, at least give her your seed." And he said, "No." He said, "I have promised my seed. The first time I have sex will be with my wife. And she promised the same with me." And they waited 3.5 years, you know. And she said, he said, "I love her and she loves me. And that's the least we can do to show our depth of loving and caring." And so it took a moment, but then the mother of the girl said, "Wow." You know, and then Ellen, Ingeborg, and Sylvia spoke up, and they said, "Boy, would I like to find a man like that." But really, he lived what he believed. He carried out the principles of what he believed. Now, what the Mormon philosophy is beyond that, we're not sharing that. That's not our point. But what he shared was exquisite, was dedication to follow whatever it is that you believe. Now, we have spoken how the magic of the subconscious mind is something that has not been utilized. It is something that cannot be utilized. You can only use it by not using it. You use it by not knowing what you're doing when you're using it. If you're going to play golf, you say, "I am putting the ball over there," and you put it there. "I am doing this with the club," and you do it. You don't say, "I hold the club this way, I hit it this way, I've got to know how to do this, I have to know." Because they point out in these articles, there's no way that the mind has any capacity to know how to hold the club handle in just such a way. We spoke about this before, how to hold the club so it'll hit the ball in just such a way and drive the ball that direction and keep it going that direction for 400 yards before it turns. You see, how do you do that? You do that only with your mind, as we said, like Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is a genius at that. Regardless of what his morals are, he's a genius at that. People oftentimes say to me, "How come the rich men are such terrible people, such misers and hoarding it and so forth, you know, terrible people?" And I said, "They're not." I said, "The rich, to be a rich man does not take being a nice person. It just takes following principle and using the law and bringing it about." What did the rich man say? I'm a rich man. I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 20 or 30, you know, whatever you say. And then you go and do it. And you're stupid, you know. Everybody says, that's the lousiest thing in the world. You can't do that. It doesn't work that way. But that's exactly how it works. That's exactly how the principle here works. That's exactly how the law of cause and effect works. That's exactly how these things here, using meditation to unlock the wisdom of the mind. Now, they point out the conscious mind, which we work with all the time, does not do much for us. Because the conscious mind is manipulated and controlled by the subconscious mind. Because whatever the subconscious mind is believed in or practiced in, that's what happens. When you have these chelas or working with the gurus, when you have any student who is a dedicated student, he turns out good. I mean, we have this stupid Ugo here. Ugo Agawa, you know. And he is so stupid. He just goes and gets his medical degree, becomes a doctor, you know. And then he says, "I think I'll become a psychiatrist." And he goes and gets his degree and becomes a psychiatrist. He says, "I don't like working in somebody else's office. I'm going to work in my own office." And so next thing you know, he's got his own clientele. He's got his own following. And now, if you had told Ugo, "You can't do it," and if you had proven to him that he's stupid, because Look at your mother. She didn't accomplish anything. Your father, they didn't accomplish anything. And you look at your sisters and brothers. They're just the bottom of the class. How can you ever expect to get anywhere? If they had done that, they would have torn away his confidence, his self-confidence, that was what brought him to his success. It's not his genius. Everyone's got the same genius. He has self-confidence in that genius. That's what brought him the success. That's what brings anyone the success in using their genius, is their self-confidence in themselves and in what they're wanting to be a genius as. Now, we say subconscious, and this is common psychology talk and psychiatry talk, and it's really of very little consequence to any of us. But what is truly what the subconscious mind is, the unvarnished brain, the brain which has not been told that it's good or bad, the brain that is the link between the infinite and the present. The brain is what makes the link between the allness which we are and the allness that we can be. Now, you say, well, Herb, you're trying to make separation there. You're trying to make something that is separate. No, no. It's there. But you don't want to accept it. You don't want to believe it. You go out and you play golf 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 like I tell you, and you'll be playing golf super in no time at all. You go out and you doubt me. You think I'm stupid. You think I'm dumb. You think I'm giving you wrong ideas. You think I'm giving you the fool's playground, you know. And you won't get anywhere. And you'll be right. I am dumb. I am stupid. Because I tried to share wisdom with you, and you weren't willing to take it. You see? Now, if you're willing to take the wisdom that I give, people come to the School of the Master, and 3 months long, each School of the Master recently has been, and there are buku people signed up for the School of the Master and present. And when you have a spiritual healing, you never remember that you were sick. No doctor's records or anything else showed that you're sick. It's a spiritual healing. One second to the other. This happens all the time. Now, in the School of the Master, I trained them all to do many things. And they all remember what I trained them in. But those who went on to accomplish, having accomplished the absolute School of the Master, they don't remember that. They don't remember anything I told them. They are just the fantastic geniuses that they are. They are the pure white light of love of all. But all of those who remember everything that I told them were fighting me tooth and nail. I said, please bring me a glass of water. You and I are alone here. Actually, there's all these other people too. You bring me a glass of water. If you see another glass of water on that table, then you're not with it at all. If you bring me a glass of water and you bring it to me and there's not another glass of water there, you don't see it at all. What happens? What happens? It's just like the Supreme Court justice here. What's his name? Douglas. Remember? William O. Douglas. Justice. William and Douglas. Remember what he did? He had a stroke. And the stroke paralyzed half his body. But he had in his brain the thought that he was not paralyzed. There is a name to the illness. And he did not believe that he was paralyzed. He didn't believe that he couldn't do that. So he asked the press to go for a walk with him. And of course he couldn't walk. He asked, and then he told them he was playing football and he was kicking goals. And he wasn't doing that. But his mind was telling him what he wanted to hear, that he could walk, that he could do these things. even though half his body was shut off by the stroke that he had. Fantastic, you know? Now, if your brain can do that to yourself, if your mind can do that to yourself, wow. Think what would happen if your mind would say, you are a master, you are a genius, you are God. Everywhere Ellen goes, she sees all the little children in the stores and stuff. She says, you're a genius, you're a genius, you're a genius. And Evil Bay is sitting here shaking his head, yes, I know that. I've been trained in that by my mother. I know that. I've been trained in that by my uncle. I know that. I've been trained in that by my aunts. I know that. I know that. You see, now, what's going to happen to him? He's not going to instantly jump in to be some famous tiddlywink, you know, but maybe he will. Maybe he will. Let him go. Direct him into the path of his magnificence, and he'll get there. But we have within us the absolute. I am the ideal spirit, mind, and body. You know, the ideal spirit, mind, and body in me does all things. And you say to yourself, okay, all is in divine order. What the hell is divine order? You know, you don't need to know. I drive the speed limit, and I drive across the United States. That's a big old country. I drive these thousands upon thousands upon thousands of miles, as we did in our motorhome, and I did in other cars. And I drove into cities all over the country. Some cities, there was no limit in the city of the speed limit. Others, very definite limits. Well, I didn't think about the speed limit. I didn't look up each city before I got there. I just said, all's in divine order. And everywhere I drove in divine order. One time I had a problem. One time I was going over a hill, coming down the hill, steep hill, in the southern mountains of the Appalachians. And I didn't think I was speeding, but I looked, and there was a sheriff's car coming down the other side. And I thought, whoops, am I doing all right? Am I doing all right? Well, I had rolled up from 65 to 75, something like that, you know. And he stopped me. He went around and brought me to a halt because I thought it. Because I saw him and I thought, whoops.
Have I passed the limit?
If I had driven and said, all is in divine order, as I always do and always have done since then, you learn a lesson, you know. And I put the cause in motion. And that's the vibration that's around me in the car. It's a vibration in my life. All is in divine order. Now, we can bring things into divine order, even when they might be out. Even when they might be out. But we have to put the cause in motion. So what did Ugo do? He went on and accomplished his goals, and he's not done yet. He's not done yet because he'll be opening up more doors, more opportunities, because he is an entrepreneur. He's not really a psychiatrist. He's a psychologist, but an entrepreneur. But he's got a psychiatrist license, so he can practice big bucks if he wants. And he will, because he likes big bucks. He thinks that's a great way to go. And who can blame him? Everyone showers abundant money on the uni, remember?
Yes.
Everyone showers money on the uni. And I think that's a nice statement. Everyone showers money on the uni. What's another nice statement?
Everyone showers money on Seville.
Everyone showers money on Seville?
Yes. Everyone showers money on Christie.
And everyone showers money on Loki.
Everyone showers money on me.
Ha ha! All of you. Even Obey. Even Obey. If you, but don't say it with a joke in your heart.
No, not at all.
Say it with all sincerity, because Everyone showers money. Whenever you're spending any money, everyone showers money on me. My bank accounts are just overflowing, you know.
By showering money means spending money.
Yeah. Oh, you've been watching the Disney movies with Donald Duck and his uncle, his rich uncle. He loves to dive into his vault of money and swim in there and thinks that's so wonderful. But this is what it's all about. This is the whole name of the game, and it's a wonderful game. But now, do you guys want that sort of thing for yourself?
Done.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
It's done.
Done.
It's done.
It's accomplished.
They said it's done.
Yes.
Is that correct?
It's done.
It is correct.
Yes.
Now, if you ever say you wish it would be so, or you want it, or it will be, forget it. You've already blown it.
I am it.
But as long as you think in the first person present tense positive, now, have we been teaching that to you very long?
Yes.
Longer than you can remember. And it works. It really works. Now, are you ready to really put these things into motion? Let's read our statement here again. In innocence, I open my heart to all that I am and live in the awareness of what I am. I feel a sense of peace and gratitude in my heart, and the divine in me leaps forth enthusiastically and intelligently. That's the 19th article. We have, I had to add three more lectures to the series of talks because I just wrote down 18 like I did for Nigeria, but here we have 21. So, and you have a copy of the other ones, not that. Where is his copy?
Bring one.
The copy of the top and the bottom and the folded one.
Top one.
The single and the folded. You got it in your hand. You got it in your hand. Yeah. Yeah, your hand's just full of them. The single and the folded. Just take one right off the bottom or any place. So these are things that we're working on. These are things that we are putting into motion for ourselves. These are things that we want to demonstrate in our life. And the only way we're going to demonstrate them is if we, that's for you.
Believe it.
If you, no, practice it.
Practice.
Yeah. Don't believe it.
I say live it.
Live it. Yes. Yes. Pardon me. I hear you incorrectly sometimes. But live it, yes. If we live it. Now, I'm going to digress for a second here. And Ellen, Sylvia, and Ingeborg insist that I don't wear the hearing aids. With them, I hear like a bird. Without them, I sometimes miss the enunciation of words that you are doing. And I say, well, why don't you want me to wear them? Well, if you wear them, you don't give us the enthusiasm you give us when you don't have them on. And we want that enthusiasm. I said, okay. Then you dedicate yourself to enunciating, speaking clearly. Now, we're going to talk about your friend, what is he, a niece, nephew of yours who wants to go in the British court? You know the guy. He wants to be a lawyer. The lawyer.
Yes.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. And I said to him, be like Diogenes and learn how to speak over the ocean waves with a mouthful of stones. And you will enunciate your words. He said, well, I want to speak before the Queen's Court. I want to talk before the Queen's Court. If you go before the Queen's Court like that, they won't have anything to do with you. They are now representing the Queen, and this is what we bring before the Queen now. And now this is, you know, with all the power and all the enthusiasm, all the diction. Now, if I were that young man, I would go to some drama school. I would go to some Shakespearean drama school even, but a drama school. And I would learn articulation. I would learn how to speak positively, dynamically, forcefully, correctly, beautifully. And then, as he says, he'd like to improve himself. Well, then he can offer himself anywhere with that ability of projection, that ability of self-confidence, that ability. He's got the knowledge. He's got the ability. He's got everything. All he needs is what?
Say it out.
It's self-confidence. Yes. Speak it out.
Say it out confidently.
To say what he believes about himself and say it with confidence and say it clearly. And you too. Normally, Seville, when you are not with other people, you speak very clearly to me. You speak very articulately. And then when you get with the other people here, you fall into the trap of of thinking that you come from somewhere, I think it's called Nigeria. And Nigeria is filled with a bunch of people who have no self-confidence in themselves. Until you got your new president and your new governor. What are they doing to the guys? All right, let's just take... okay, have you heard of Obama?
Obama.
Yes. Have you ever heard of Obama? He's the president of the United States.
President.
He's the president.
Yeah,
he's a black president. I mean, a black president in a white nation is a stupid thing. Why would a white nation elect a black president? Because he's not black. He is a human being. But first, you know what he is? He is an American citizen. He's an American citizen. He was raised in Hawaii. And Hawaii was taken into the United States as a state, you know. And his father moved to Kenya. And his mother remarried and so forth. I mean, a broken home, all these interesting things. But let me say it again. He was elected president of the United States because he was number one, an American citizen. You listen to him, you'll find out what an American citizen's like. He believes in his country. Ellen moved to the United States and she became a citizen. Sylvia became a citizen. Ingeborg became a citizen. But all of them still love their native land. They're still always talking and comparing their native land. They haven't taken America as their citizenship yet. But what they have done, they have listened to Obama speak. And Obama speaks with such dignity and such dedication for his country. And then we heard, what's the president of South Africa?
Zuma.
Mandela.
No, this is Zuma.
Nelson Mandela.
Nelson, thank you very much. Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
We saw a movie on him the other night. And from the movie, if he is that kind of man, wow, what a man of principle. He united the South Africans with a strange way of uniting them by having the sports team, which was basically all white, play against all other nations in the world and win. And he got them to win and do beautiful things and do fantastic things so they would just be utterly amazing. And they were. And what he showed he could do after being in prison for 27 years and then finally coming out and taking over and being elected president because of his charisma, because of his self, who he really is, the type of man he is, the type of being he is, and it's fantastic. So, we will pause at this moment, and we will begin in a few minutes. And thus we have our first lecture for this seminar.